mean, the fact is the United Nations, under the Security Council, in keeping with the Charter, has killed more Iraqis than Mr. Bush the first, Mr. Clinton, and Mr. Bush the second since 1991.
And you see, the United States is sinking deeper and deeper and deeper into quicksand in Iraq. You can only be reminded of Vietnam.
At this point in history, I think we are the closest that we have ever been to banning war forever.
One can only but hope and ask all of our international friends like you all to continue to keep Liberia on the agenda.
So that by the time of a march on Washington and the time of the sit-ins, that idea had been seeded throughout African-American communities.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Wednesday, August 20th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The FBI said today the deadly bomb that ripped through UN headquarters in Iraq was made from 1,000 pounds of old munitions, including a single 500-pound bomb, all materials from Saddam Hussein's pre-war arsenal that required, quote, no great degree of sophistication, unquote, to assemble. An FBI agent at the site of yesterday's unprecedented attack on the World Organization said it was impossible yet to say whether the bomb was the work of Saddam loyalists or foreign terrorists. More on that in a moment. Secretary General Kofi Annan said yesterday that both the United States and the United Nations made mistakes when it came to Iraq, and security was being reassessed after the bomb killed at least 20 people at UN headquarters. The coalition has made some mistakes, and maybe we have too, Annan said, returning to UN headquarters after cutting his summer vacation short. I don't want to get into finger-pointing, but along the way, mistakes have been made by all concerned. Annan said the international organization, which provides humanitarian relief to millions of Iraqis, would not be deterred by yesterday's attack. He said, "We will persevere. We will continue. It is essential work." Earlier in the day in Stockholm, Sweden, Annan made those comments. "We will not be intimidated." He said a multinational force for Iraq was under discussion, but it will not be a UN force. Israel decided today to carry out military strikes against terror suspects, an official said, as the Palestinians held an emergency cabinet meeting to decide how to respond to a Hamas suicide bombing that killed 20, including five Americans. Israeli officials chose to strike militants regardless of what the Palestinian Authority does, a security official said, on condition of anonymity. The raids were expected to begin later today. A column of Israeli tanks are heading to Ramallah in response to yesterday's suicide bombing that killed 20 people in Jerusalem. Free Speech Radio News' Washington correspondent Mitch Jeserich spoke with Mark Lance, who is former director of Georgetown University's Peace and Justice Program. He's also the co-editor of the journal Peace and Change. After just returning from Palestine, he gives us his perspective on the recent suicide attack and Israel's looming response.
This was a bombing that was apparently carried out by Islamic Jihad, which is a small, very militant rejectionist organization in Palestine. In my view, any attack on civilians is appalling and morally appalling and politically counterproductive. However, this attack is utterly predictable. I mean, all of the major militant factions in Palestine agreed to a ceasefire along the lines of the roadmap, in exchange for very concrete assurances from Israel of release of prisoners and cessation of attacks against their leaders. Israel has violated all of those agreements. They've repeatedly carried out assassination attempts on leaders of Islamic groups within Palestine. And everyone in Israel and everyone in Palestine and anyone who's paying attention anywhere else knows that this will lead to reprisals from these groups. This is exactly how this happens. The specific large-scale violent attacks are largely cyclical. They're, for the most part, fairly, you know, and if you read the communiques of groups like Hamas and Jihad, they explicitly say that what they're acting in response to. So these actions are very much cyclical. But the crucial point to understanding what's happening is that there's also a process on the ground that's going on that's providing the background for all of this. And that is the continued colonization of the remaining 22% of Palestine, the colonization, by the building of settlements, by the linking of those settlements with exclusivist infrastructure, with roads that Palestinians are not allowed to drive on and things like that, and now with the building of walls around the remaining Palestinian enclaves. That's what's going on. That's why the process of that is why it benefits Israel to continue this cycle, because as long as this cycle is going on, they can say we don't have to deal with any underlying issues. The whole issue is the violence. And whenever it looks like we're close to some sort of an agreement to end these attacks, Israel tries to assassinate a leader of a group. So it benefits Israel. It also benefits the minority rejectionist fronts in Palestine who don't want an accommodation with Israel. Because as long as this fighting goes on and attention is diverted from the issues of the colonization of the West Bank and Gaza, then they can just treat this as a fight against all of Israel, against all the Jews, against, you know, whatever they want to frame it as.
Mark Lantz, former director of Georgetown University's Peace and Justice Program, speaking with Free Speech Radio News' Washington correspondent Mitch Jeserich. Condemnation of yesterday's terrorist suicide attack on the UN headquarters in Baghdad and sympathy for its victims came from political leaders around the world today as rescuers sifted through the wreckage searching for survivors. The blast injured some 100 UN officers and Iraqi civilians and killed at least 20 people, including Sergio Vieira de Mello, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and the highest-ranking UN official in Iraq. No group has yet taken responsibility for the blast, but it's thought to have been specifically targeted against Emilio. Speaking today at UN headquarters in New York, spokesperson Fred Eckhart said that security surrounding the compound was not as tight as it could have been.
We have no indications today, as we had none yesterday, as to who might have been responsible for the attack. I don't know about an offer by the U.S. to locate the UN offices within the U.S. compound. I think you can understand why, if that offer were made, we would prefer to have our own headquarters location. The security around our location was not as secure as you might find at the U.S. compound, and that was a decision we made so that our offices could be more accessible to people. We did not think at the time we were taking an unnecessary risk. And in fact, we were in the process of erecting a rather substantial concrete barrier, some 12 feet tall, around the perimeter when this attack took place. So we were taking steps to fortify our own headquarters location while still trying to maintain a certain openness to the Iraqi people whom we expected to come in regularly as our guests. There was an almost universally recognized security problem in Iraq. We realized it was a high-risk environment. We did not harden our headquarters location from a security point of view because we didn't think it was necessary. As a result of the attack of yesterday, obviously, we're going to have to rethink.
UN spokesperson Fred Eckert. Yesterday's explosion rocked the UN compound while journalists inside gathered at a press conference led by Benin Seven, director of the UN Oil for Food Program. The shockingly graphic and dramatic footage of the entire event was captured on tape by reporters with NHK Japanese television.
We found that
as the smoke clears a bit, people are heard screaming in various languages while reporters and UN personnel covered with blood run for cover. Among the survivors was Irish peace activist Michael Birmingham of the humanitarian group Voices in the Wilderness, who shared his experiences this morning on Democracy Now!
Well, I was in the United Nations headquarters in Baghdad to do some work with some families who've been under threat of eviction since the war. And, well, like, I guess it was around 4:30, as people have said. I'm not exactly sure on the time. We just heard a huge explosion. And I was in the front of the building and on the computer. I guess everything just went dark and some of the ceiling came down and covered us in kind of dust. So there was just confusion, obviously, everywhere. When those of us in the room managed to find our way out into the corridor, there was even there kind of more devastation, just with people who were very, very badly injured, some unconscious, others who were conscious but unable to move and in great pain and very bad injuries. We couldn't see, nobody really knew what was going on, and some of us who were able tried to carry people out into the yard, just away from the building to safety. And, you know, we waited there then for the with some of those people for the helicopters and ambulances to arrive, which took a while. And a lot of the people there were, you know, some of them were clinging to life. They had really bad injuries. So there was any of us that had kind of first aid knowledge were trying to keep, you know, just tourniquet on people's arms to stem the bleeding and keep people's airways clear of blood. It was a terrible scene, you know, and there was maybe one or two doctors there and many American soldiers that, you know, who have come into the UN headquarters since the war. So it was a horrible scene, and I know that from talking to people in the hospital afterwards, the back of the UN building where probably Sergio Vieira de Mello, the UN representative, was killed is even worse and more badly damaged.
Irish peace activist Michael Birmingham of the humanitarian group Voices in the Wilderness sharing his experiences this morning on Democracy Now! You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. It's your financial support that makes this show possible, so if you're enjoying it, we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at www.pacifica.org. That's www.pacifica.org. The cleanup at the UN compound in Baghdad continues. The attacks on U.S. soldiers in Iraq average about a dozen a day as dissatisfaction with the U.S. occupation among Iraqis continues to rise. Yet surprise has been expressed in the international community that the UN has come under attack. To help us understand how and why this has happened, Peace Watch spoke with the former head of the UN Oil for Food Program in Iraq, Dennis Halliday.
Initially, I was surprised and shocked myself. But as the hours went by since yesterday, I've become to think it through. And, of course, I really am not surprised. We have to remember that in Iraq and in the Middle East and the neighboring countries to Iraq, the United Nations is seen to be responsible for 13 years of comprehensive economic sanctions. I mean, the fact is the United Nations, under the Security Council, keeping with the Charter, has killed more Iraqis than Mr. Bush the first, Mr. Clinton, and Mr. Bush the second since, what, 1991.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is something that Iraqis do not forget. They cannot forget. Perhaps over a million Iraqis died because of those sanctions. Every Iraqi family lost a child, lost an elderly parent, or knows somebody who suffered who lost a family member. It's a huge issue which simply will not go away. And how we can possibly forget that when something like this happens, of course, is very indicative. I don't quite know of what, mm-hmm. but we just haven't recognized, acknowledged to ourselves that the UN, in fact, has been guilty of sustained killing, of perhaps genocide, on the people of Iraq since 1990.
Even though those sanctions were driven by the U.S., pushing the UN to impose those sanctions, you think that the people of Iraq blame that on the UN?
I think they do. And the UN office, where the Canal Hotel, where I worked myself, and Hans von Sponeck after me, we ran the Oil for Food program out of that office. It's known as the headquarters of the United Nations. Now, we know that the US and the UK drove these sanctions. Does the average Iraqi know that? I'm not sure. But the fact is, as you've implied perhaps, the UN and the US, in the minds of many in the Middle East and in Iraq, have become merged. And the fact that the UN is now present in Iraq, and somebody as senior as Sergio de Mello is present or was present in Iraq, is a form of collaboration between the UN and the US, which for many Iraqis must be very upsetting and perhaps confirmation that the UN is not their friend, has not been there to serve the needs of the Iraqi people since 1991.
Also, if you add on to that the fact that the UN inspectors were a key and critical part of this whole leading up to the invasion of Iraq, you layer those aspects of this issue on, it does seem to make a case that perhaps there is some resentment on the part of the Iraqi people. At the same time, I was reading reports this morning whereby many Iraqi people have said, yes, all that happened, but now we see the UN as somebody that's in there distributing humanitarian aid and helping the Iraqi people, and it's unlikely that they would be the ones to target the UN.
Well, I mean, that may be true for some, but the fact is the UN has never distributed humanitarian aid in Iraq. This is a myth. The Oil for Food program was fully funded by the Iraqi government and the Iraqi oil revenues. The administration was handled by the Iraqi government, the ministries of trade in particular and health. They managed 49,000 agents throughout the country to distribute this food from them to the people of Iraq. So the UN had a very small role. We've blown it out of proportion. It's just not correct. So the government, in fact, got credit for that program. And the success of that program and the fact that it has prevented starvation in Iraq, the full credit for that has gone to Saddam Hussein and his people and his technocrats quite correctly.
So in the eyes of the Iraqi people, they see a much different UN from that's being painted by, I would say, the mainstream media and the world press?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the fact is, for 10 years, the government in Baghdad has naturally, understandably, held the United Nations responsible for sanctions and sustaining sanctions, knowing full well the consequences of death rates, the children, the loss of life, the malnutrition, the leukemia, other problems growing out of the first Gulf War. And even the first Gulf War, you know, has not gone away. After all, it was a United Nations war. The United Nations war led by the United States with United Nations atrocities. The Basra Road massacre, use of depleted uranium, destruction of infrastructure in breach of the Geneva Conventions. Now, we know this was done by the British and the Americans, but in the eyes of the many Iraqis, this again was a United Nations-sponsored, endorsed military adventure. These things are alive and well, sad to say, in the minds of many, and perhaps they shouldn't be forgotten because mm-hmm. they are a reality.
When you were the head of the Oil for Food program in Iraq, did you detect anti-UN sentiment from the Iraqi people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I walked freely with complete safety through the bazaars of Baghdad on a Friday morning. I didn't go with anybody often. I knew lots of people in the marketplace or in the tea shops. Some people were critical. Some people would attack me, never violently, but verbally. Some would give me credit for making things better under the Oil for Food program. But the fact is, in the minds of some who know, the fact is this program was extremely extravagant, it was a huge waste of money. The overheads that the United Nations took were massive. The salaries are very expensive. And, of course, don't forget, we gave away 30% of Iraqi oil revenue to Kuwait in compensation for that war. Which, you know, is a nice gesture maybe, but not when it's somebody else's money in a country where people were dying from malnutrition and other health and food-related, water-related problems. So the UN doesn't deserve to be highly considered in Iraq today or even in the future, I would say.
So, Mr. Halliday, who do you feel is responsible for the blast yesterday that blew off a large chunk of the UN headquarters in Baghdad?
Well, despite what I've just said, I mean, despite the fact that you could almost argue that the Iraqis are justifiably angry and bitter about the United Nations and its role in the past and even in the present, I don't believe, in fact, this is a homegrown act of violence. It seems to me to be imported violence because there's no history of suicide bombing in Iraq, apart from 10 days ago when we had the Jordanian mission. This is not a tradition in the Iraqi world. This is a secular state where the Wahhabi school of interpretation of the Quran doesn't seem to exist. The interpretation that supports suicide bombing or jihad is not present or was not present. I just don't think this is an Iraqi phenomenon.
So jihad, there's been speculation that perhaps al-Qaeda forces are actually integrated into Baghdad at this point. And the Bush administration has characterized all the attacks in Iraq as diehard Saddam Hussein supporters. What's your assessment?
Yeah, well, I'm sure there is a remnant of the diehard Saddam Hussein group in town. There's also a large number of genuine Iraqi nationalists who are offended, outraged by military occupation by the United States. I want, of course, that occupation to end. And I think it's the collapse of law and order in Iraq, which, as DeMello himself said just recently, without law and order, there's nothing we can do for the people of this country. I mean, the breakdown of that and the disillusionment of the military and the police force has led to a country that has borders that are completely porous. I mean, anybody who doesn't like the United States of America, and there are a few of those clearly in the region, seem to have poured into Iraq and are now using the opportunity of the chaos that the occupying powers have created in Iraq to take potshots at Americans and now, perhaps sadly, even use these terrible weapons of suicide bombing. I think the U.S. has brought upon itself the chaos and the catastrophe for the Iraqi people and now for themselves and now for the U.N., in fact, that we're seeing today.
Mm-hmm. So has there been any solid indication, in your opinion, of outside involvement other than your assessment of the fact that the jihad, the suicide bombings don't seem to be typical to the Iraqi culture?
Perhaps not. I mean, I have no evidence, obviously, and I dare say we'll hear lots of theories in the coming hours and coming days. I know that somebody's pointing the finger at this small group up in Ansar al-Islam, the group that was in Sulaymaniyah, the Kurdish north, for many years. Out of the control of the government in Baghdad, they may have been revitalized in some way and have taken this up. I'm not sure. I've no idea if that's correct or not. But clearly, it's an organization that is skilled and has done this before, judging by the evidence we've seen in the last 2 weeks.
Is it possible this was simply an opportunist type bombing?
Well, the fact is that the United Nations headquarters at the Canal Hotel has always been vulnerable. In my day, we had something like 200 Iraqi army troops around that compound, providing protection, checking vehicles, and all the rest of it. That's, of course, gone with the collapse of the Iraqi army. And the United States, understandably stretched, has not met its obligations of occupation to provide protection for the United Nations. I think that's been acknowledged now as an oversight. And a tragic one, as it now turns out. And where the truck actually struck the building is just where I used to sit myself in the same office as the late Sergio DeMello. And the border, the wall protecting the compound is literally, I believe, 10 feet from the back window of my own office and his office. It was clearly a very vulnerable situation, and there was sadly, no protection whatsoever.
Mm. I read where you were quoted as saying that there was deep dissatisfaction in Iraq with the UN for 13 years of sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
You were further quoted as saying that the UN has been corrupted by the Security Council and has implemented programs mm-hmm. incompatible with its mm-hmm. charter. How has the UN been corrupted, in your opinion?
Well, you know, in the Middle East, there are two subjects you can't separate. One is Iraq, and together with Iraq goes Palestine and the treatment of the Palestinians. And the United Nations is seen as responsible for the neglect of the Palestinians. This council has passed dozens of resolutions. Israel has not been obliged to live up to these resolutions. And we have the crisis that we have today, which seems to be worsening along with Iraq. So this double standard of approach of the United Nations, of the United States, vis-a-vis Palestine, Israel, and Iraq, is very conspicuous. Perhaps we forget about it here, but in North Africa and Egypt and the world I've been to in the last, 6-9 months, that is the topic that comes even before Iraq on the agendas of most individual Arabs and people in that part of the world. They are just so angry with the U.S. and its position on Israel and Palestine. We will never get peace in the Middle East, in my view, until that is resolved, until Israel is obliged to respect the resolutions of the United Nations and go back to its borders and give the Palestinians a life and a state and independence. The UN is seen to have these double standards. Iraq goes into Kuwait, quite rightly the UN condemns that and takes action. Israel goes into Lebanon, nothing happens. It's too obvious to those in the neighborhood as to how this UN has been worked, corrupted, abused, I would say, by the US in particular and by other of the five permanent members in particular.
Mm. Finally, Dennis Halliday, as the former head of the Oil for Food program in Iraq and as someone who actually sat in the same office or occupied the same office that Mr. D'Amelio occupied, what were your thoughts yesterday when you saw the footage from the bomb explosion?
Well, I must say, I didn't really think of myself in that office and in that corner of the building. What I thought of was that here are good people like DeMello, like his international staff, and like his many, many more Iraqi staff who are working as hard as they can for the people of Iraq, trying to make some progress despite the U.S. occupation, thinking ahead, planning ahead in the humanitarian and other areas, development and so on, health, education, and they lose their lives simply for doing their jobs, and that, of course, is without any justification whatsoever. These are good people who have given their lives for Iraq, and, of course, it's a tragedy that this has happened, and I hope the U.N. will have the courage to continue. This cannot be the end of a U.N. role. What we need now is an independent Iraqi government, a sovereign state restored, and if and when they turn to the United Nations for assistance, we need to be ready and stand by to respond, whether it's UNICEF or World Health or capital investment or whatever it is. The UN's job is to be there for the people of Iraq after this tragic history and relationship between the organization and Iraq and its people.
And finally, a few thoughts about Mr. D'Amelio.
Well, this is a man who seems to have a great history, who's made a great contribution to the work of the UN in various places, very difficult and dangerous places in some cases. I understand he did a very good job in Timor. He was elevated to this post of High Commissioner for Human Rights, terribly important in today's world where, sad to say, even the permanent members of the Security Council do not respect human rights, do not respect the Charter or the Geneva Convention. So his role was huge. And it's a shame that he's been cut down in the prime, in the sense of his career. He's a young man of, mid-50s, a man with courage who has addressed issues of international law, human rights, the things that are really important, I think, for all of us and for the world that is faced with terrorism, which has got to be addressed, not through violence, of course, not through revenge, but through addressing the human rights needs of everybody, including the countries that tend to produce the philosophy of terrorism as a device in the absence of any other way to respond. We've lost, I think, a very good civil servant, and that's a tragedy for the UN at this particular time.
Dennis Halliday was the United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator in Iraq from September 1997 as the Assistant Secretary General until October 1998, when he resigned.
This is Anthony Sloan, a.k.a. T, from the Pattersons Taking the Train to Tibet, the engineer and sometimes sound gatherer for Pacifica's Peace Watch. I do hope you are being informed by our efforts here. If you find what we do valuable, please make a financial commitment to Peace Watch so we may continue our work on your behalf. Kindly make a secure online pledge by visiting our website at pacifica.org. That's PICIFICA.ORG. Or you may send us a tax-exempt donation via check or money order addressed to Peace Watch, care of Pacifica, 2390, that's 2390, Champlain, Champlain, Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. Thank you so much for your support, and I'll see you on the front lines. Peace.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. We'll be back in a moment.